Sam, how are you today?
Doing good. Wish I had news as good as all of the NBA testing negative, but I still got some good stuff to share.
You always have good stuff to share, and let's begin on a positive note. Wedding Crashers at 15 years old now, celebrating the greatness of this movie. It certainly is one of the all-time greats. Where does it rank amongst the all-time greats on the Michael Warshauer scale?
That's a good question. It's certainly one of those movies that, like, I remember very vividly that summer that it came out and seeing it. And it was a movie that I like immediately bought as soon as I could and sort of watched over and over again. Certainly a staple. I think for me, it sort of stands up as one of the funnier comedies of its era, of the 2000s in particular. And it's really interesting to see kind of what its legacy has been over these last 15 years. I mean, it's kind of hard to remember now, but it was the first R-rated comedy to top $200 million at the box office. So it really kind of opened the door for movies like The Hangover series or even Deadpool to have studios like acknowledge that they could make lots and lots of money off of these big-time comedies. But at the same time, it also was kind of the end of an era. The movies that both Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn did after that never really reached the same levels of Wedding Crashers, both as the box office and popularity-wise. It was kind of the peak of them as a duo and sort of their comedy careers. It kind of blew my mind to go back and look at IMDb after this movie came out and some of the things that they did really just aren't as memorable as this. But it also was sort of at the beginning of Bradley Cooper's career. I mean, that was where he sort of started to become a higher profile actor by playing the villain. That basically is where we got Isla Fisher's career from, which has been hysterical. And Rachel McAdams, of course, has continued the strong career that she already had since then. So I think to me it's a really interesting kind of like case study as to like how comedy sort of evolved starting in the mid-2000s. But for me, certainly for like its own era, I would rank it as maybe like a top three comedy of the 2000s.
Wow, very high praise for Wedding Crashers. And Michael, you kind of alluded to the comedy relationship there with Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, and I think you nailed it, right? Like early on, those two couldn't miss with some of their movies, but then you start to see some of the later trailers, and it's like, oh my gosh, here we go again. You know, do you rank them towards, you know, like the top tier comedy duos, more towards the bottom of the rankings? How do you view them over the course of history here, as far as comedy goes?
That's a good question. You know, I think honestly, I'd probably put Owen Wilson's collaborations with Ben Stiller above the stuff that he did with Vince Vaughn. I mean, like I think of like Zoolander and even his appearance in like Meet the Parents and some of those movies are just so good. I mean, even Starsky and Hutch, which is not, you know, doesn't have the longevity that a Wedding Crashers does. It, like, that duo is just so funny together. So I would certainly put, even with, like, Owen Wilson, I'd put his stuff with Ben Stiller ahead. But, you know, it's interesting. I think that this is definitely, like, again, like, the high point of these two guys. So I'm not sure if there's another movie that they did together that I would say is better. So I don't think that they necessarily come out as like one of the great comedy duos even of their era, but certainly both of them were such massive comedy stars during that time. So it's kind of hard to you know, judge them just as a duo when both of them were so massive throughout that decade or so.
I often wonder, what kind of light do we look at the movie The Internship with if Wedding Crashers never happened? Because The Internship will always be looked at as just kind of like a sequel to Wedding Crashers. But The Internship was hilarious. I mean, it also had one of the legends in John Goodman, and it also had a first ballot Hall of Famer in Rob Riggle, and his role in The Internship was so wrong but so funny. It was just hilarious. I've often wanted, because I thought that movie was great, but again, people will always look at that and say, yeah, you know what, they already did most of that with Wedding Crashers.
Yeah, I think part of it too is that that movie just happened to come out so long after Wedding Crashers that it sort of felt like it, instead of sort of being almost like a spiritual sequel, it was sort of just like putting these two guys back together. So I think that time kind of did a disservice to to that movie, but it is kind of hard to top, such a massive hit, like I said, at the box office and just like popularity wise. There's just dozens of cases in movie history of people kind of comparing those second collaborations to another one. It's almost like, looking at the David Spade, Chris Farley movies. And, there are people that love Black Sheep, but most people will probably tell you that it's not as good as Tommy Boy, which is a classic. So it's kind of interesting to think about it that way, but certainly kind of an underrated movie, certainly for that duo.
Great comparison with King Farley and Spade talking about Tommy Boy and Black Sheep, because you are 150% correct about that. Black Sheep was a great movie. It never got its due diligence because it came out shortly after Tommy Boy and people never gave it its fair due. All right, shifting gears now. I saw this movie trending on Twitter the other day, Ghosts of War. It was trending on Twitter a couple days back, and I couldn't figure out why or what it was all about. What do we know about Ghosts of War?
Well, unfortunately, it was a movie that I think was trending for all the wrong reasons. It's kind of a weird one. It's about five American soldiers at the end of World War II who are assigned to hold a French chateau, and they begin encountering a supernatural enemy far more terrifying than anything seen on the battlefield. It doesn't really have a very big cast. Skylar Astin and Billy Zane are probably the two more recognizable names in there, but it was not getting very good reviews, and was kind of one of those movies where the debate seems to be, is it a bad movie or a so bad it's great movie? One review that I saw on Rotten Tomatoes said, even if you enjoy this movie, you'll probably never want to watch it again. It just sounds kind of like it falls apart in the third act, the last 20-30 minutes of the movie. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's got 36% from critics and only 52% from the audience. So unfortunately, it sounds like one of those movies that just sort of people started watching and talking about for again, all the wrong reasons. But definitely, if you're looking for something in that so bad it's good category, this would be a good one to check out.
Michael Warschauer is our Hollywood guru, and he joins us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Okay, Michael, time to dive into this Peacock app. It's been out for 5 days now. I downloaded it the day that it came out, and one of the main reasons I downloaded it was because I thought that maybe we'd get a deeper look into the vault of Saturday Night Live. I was tremendously disappointed in what they offered in the vault. Now, if you have to pay for a premium subscription, maybe that will pull back some of the layers here and give me a much wider variety in the vault, but I was very much underwhelmed as far as that went. But to be fair to the app in its entirety, I didn't really get a chance to explore a whole lot more than that. What are some of the early reviews of the Peacock app?
It's interesting. Like we talked about last week, I think there was just so much confusion as to what was actually going to be included and on what tiers that when Peacock launched, like I had the same reaction. I sort of went in and started looking for specific things, looking for that SNL library. And it really only goes back, as far as full episodes are concerned, a couple of seasons. There is the large clip library that they have. So I think you can search for specific sketches. I know that there was like a whole section where you could watch like just the sports sketches they've had over the years and that kind of thing. So I think there's still that library. But as far as watching full episodes, it's still not quite there. Overall, I think sort of my reaction to Peacock and sort of the unanimous reaction has been it's totally fine for a free service. That's the nicest thing is that right now a majority of the content on Peacock is ad-supported and free, so you don't have to sign up for one of the two premium tiers that they have. One is $5 and has less ads, and one is $10 and has no ads at all. But the main benefit you get out of those two tiers, at the moment anyways, is that you get full seasons of their original shows, you get live sports, which is a major pull for them, and you also eventually will be getting early access to the late-night shows on NBC like Seth Meyers. That has kind of been put on hold, like a lot of things with coronavirus kind of messing up their production schedules and shooting from home. But you'll also be able eventually to get all NBC shows available the next day, similar to how you would on Hulu. But again, like at the end of the day, I don't think you need that paid service right now unless you are really hankering to get the last couple games of the English Premier League season on the NBC Sports section of things and get some of that live TV. Otherwise, for the most part, the catalog that's free is pretty good. There's not a lot of things yet that are on the paywall, behind the paywall, that you can't get on the free tier. So that is kind of a nice thing in an age where we've got so many streaming services that all have various price points. I said one that you just, you know, it's, you can watch a few commercials and not pay for it. Really, it's only major competitor right now is Amazon's IMDb TV, which you can find, I think, on the Amazon Prime video app. Their major thing that they have right now is they just got Mad Men, but they certainly do not have the catalog that NBC has. So there's a lot to explore there, a lot of ways that I think it will improve eventually once you know, there's more live sports, once there's more of the original shows finally making their debut. But for right now, it's a perfectly serviceable ad-supported free app.
Well, I'm interested in doing a little bit more digging when it comes to that, because I did not realize that you could search for specific sketches on SNL, and there are a lot of golden ones I could pull up from the 90s that I would love to get my hands on. So maybe I'll go back and I'll try that again tonight. All right, I'm kind of sort of asking this next question on behalf of our morning show host, Bruce Van Dyke, who's a huge fan of the show Dancing with the Stars. I've heard my co-host Rocco Nucci actually auditioned, and he set the dance floor on fire. They said he's way too good. We can't allow him on the show. But this is a show going through a great deal of changes right now, Michael. Why all the changes?
Well, you know, we're talking about the 15-year anniversary of Wedding Crashers. It's hard to believe that Dancing with the Stars has been on TV that long as well. Tom Bergeron has been the host for the first 28 seasons, of the show. He is out not at his own will. ABC decided to replace him. Also gone is Aaron Andrews, who's been with the show since 2012. Basically, they're looking to sort of give the show a new creative direction. I think when you've been on for 15 years, you want to try and figure out new ways to change your format. We've certainly seen this before on some long-running reality shows like The Voice or American Idol in particular have changed up judges and hosts. America's Got Talent is another one. So it's not too much of a surprise there. I think it's a surprise that the longevity of Tom Bergeron in particular just kind of ending like that is a little bit surprising. But they did announce that he is going to be replaced by Tyra Banks. So it's kind of just adding a whole new dimension to the show, adding maybe a whole new audience that maybe wouldn't have tuned in before just to see Tyra Banks host it. So it will be interesting to see what they do as far as like actual format changes in the competition or, you know, the contestants or dancers or any of that kind of thing. But certainly at the top, some major and pretty surprising changes.
Yes, some very surprising changes indeed. All right, Michael, it's come to that point in the interview where we need to find out what we should be watching this weekend. I know for a fact I'll be watching a lot of Major League Baseball as the season gets underway, but there are a lot of options over the next 7 days. What should we be watching this weekend?
Well, a lot of good things are coming. This week is kind of a quiet one as far as new releases ahead of the end of July and the beginning of August. Next weekend there'll be a lot more. But this week, a couple things to check out on HBO. First, the final season of their show, Room 104, premieres on Friday. It's a kind of bizarre anthology series about a specific motel room. It's very unique, but it's entering its final season. It has guest stars this season, including Jillian Bell, Dave Bautista, and creator Mark Duplass, amongst others. So that's one to check out on Friday. And one that isn't premiering this week, but that I haven't mentioned and want to make sure I do, is on HBO. It's called I May Destroy You. It is written by and created by and starring Michaela Cole as a woman rebuilding her life after being raped. It is actually a very good dark comedy. You wouldn't necessarily expect that with the subject matter, but it is incredibly unique. It's being heralded as the TV show to watch this summer as sort of the breakout hit. I got caught up myself recently and can attest to that. So if you're looking for something new to watch before we get a whole new batch of stuff in August, or if you're just tired of watching sports this weekend, that's certainly one to check out.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting take on a dark comedy, for sure. No question about that.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, as always, we appreciate the insight. We appreciate the time. And as always, we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Michael. Again, Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.